All right, welcome back to the Deep Jive. Today, we're going to be tackling something that's super relevant no matter what area of law you're interested in, and that's undue influence.
Definitely, yeah. A concept that comes up in all sorts of legal contexts, really.
Absolutely. And to really break this down, we're going to dive deep, so to speak, into a specific case. We'll be looking at Russo v. Miller, decided by the Maine Supreme Court back in 1989. Now, you might think, okay, 1989, that's going to be ancient history in the legal world.
Right.
But trust me, the principles at play here, the way this case shows how courts try to protect people when there's like a major power imbalance in a contract, that's timeless. It's relevant whether you're prepping for the bar exam or just, you know, trying to make sure you're not getting taken advantage of in your own life. And this Russo case, it really puts a spotlight on what happens when things get, well, unfair, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think Russo v. Miller is a really great case to kind of tease out all the different nuances of undue influence. You know, we're not just talking about someone being a little pushy. We're talking about situations where one party is really being taken advantage of. And the facts of this case, well, they're pretty striking. You have Sandra Russo, who had a well-documented history of serious mental health issues. And she ends up selling her home for a price that, well, it was shockingly low compared to what it was actually worth.
Yeah. And just to underscore that point, we're talking about Russo selling her home, her homestead, for only $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider the market value of the property at the time, well, let's just say someone got a steal of the deal and it wasn't Russo.
Right. And to make things even more complicated, even more concerning, really, is the role of her neighbor, Marlis Goldschmidt. Now, you'd think a neighbor, right, would look out for someone, especially if they knew that person were struggling. But it turns out Goldschmidt was actually working as an agent for the Byers, the Millers, and Jada and Associates.
So not just a friendly neighbor, then.
Not exactly. And what makes it worse is that she never told Russo about this. This whole undisclosed agency thing, it really throws a wrench in things. It suggests a real breach of trust, the kind of trust you'd expect, you know, in a neighborly relationship.
Right. Like, imagine thinking your friend's helping you sell something, only to find out they were secretly in cahoots with the buyer the whole time. Not a good feeling.
Exactly.
And to add to this whole picture of an unbalanced situation, the records show that Russo didn't have any legal counsel, no real estate agent. She didn't even bother to get an appraisal to understand what her property was worth. Meanwhile, the Byers, they had legal representation. So right from the get-go, it's clear that things weren't exactly fair.
Yeah, and to really highlight how much Russo may have been taken advantage of, the Byers, after they bought the property from her, well, they turned around and sold just a portion of it for a significant profit. I mean, that really makes you question the motives behind the original purchase, doesn't it?
It does. So given everything we've discussed, all these red flags, the trial court made the decision to rescind the sale. Now, for our listeners who might not be familiar with that term, rescission basically means they hit the undo button on the contract like it never happened. And that was all because of this issue of undue influence. So this brings us to the core legal concept here. What does the law, what do courts mean when they talk about undue influence? How did the Maine Supreme Court apply this in Russo v. Miller? I mean, it feels like it's got to be more than just, you know, someone being really persuasive right now.
You're absolutely right. It's not about just, you know, having a silver tongue or being a master negotiator. It goes much deeper than that. It's about whether someone's will was essentially overborne or if they were taken advantage of because of a specific relationship of trust they had with the other party. To really understand the legal framework here, we turn to the restatement, second of contracts, specifically section 177. This is kind of like the gold standard for defining undue influence. And it boils down to, well, a few key elements.
Okay, let's break those down.
Sure. So the first thing you need is what they call unfair persuasion. And this can manifest in different ways. You could have a situation where one person is just so dominant, so controlling, that the other person basically loses their ability to make their own decisions. You know, imagine like a puppet where someone else is pulling the strings.
Right. So it's not really a free and fair agreement if one person's essentially being manipulated.
Exactly. But it doesn't always have to be that overt. You can also have unfair persuasion in situations where there's a relationship of trust, maybe a close friendship, a family relationship, even a neighborly relationship like we saw in Russo. And that trust is abused, exploited for personal gain.
So it can be more subtle, like a betrayal of trust as opposed to outright coercion.
Precisely. And that's what makes undue influence tricky sometimes. It can be harder to spot. So that's the first element, unfair persuasion. But you also need a second thing, inducement.
Inducement, okay. What does that mean in this context?
So inducement means that the unfair persuasion, the pressure, or the manipulation, it has to have directly led the weaker party to agree to the contract. It's not enough for there to just be some kind of influence floating around. It has to be the direct cause of them signing on the dotted line.
Got it. So, cause and effect, the influence has to be the reason they entered into the contract.
Exactly. And then there's one more piece of the puzzle, and that's the lack of good faith defense.
Lack of good faith. Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, so this basically comes into play if the person who's doing the influencing, they genuinely had no idea that they were exploiting the other person. Like, they were totally oblivious to the power imbalance or the vulnerability of the other party.
So basically, they'd have to prove they were acting in good faith, not intentionally trying to pull a fast one.
Exactly. But to be honest, that's a pretty tough defense to make. Courts are generally pretty skeptical if there's a lot of evidence suggesting that someone should have known better.
Makes sense. So with those elements in mind, unfair persuasion, inducement, and this lack of good faith defense, how did they apply to the Russo v. Miller case? We've talked about a lot of factors that seem to fit into those categories.
Yeah, and the court really did a good job of analyzing each of those elements. So when you look at Sandra Russo, her history of mental health issues was a huge factor. The court recognized that this likely made her much more susceptible to influence and impaired her ability to make sound, independent decisions.
Right, like someone with a broken leg, they're going to be more reliant on others, more vulnerable to suggestion.
Exactly. And that brings us to the confidential relationship aspect. Now, in this case, it wasn't like Goldschmidt was Russo's lawyer or a court-appointed guardian or anything.
Right, just her neighbor.
But the court understood that because of that neighborly relationship, Russo likely placed a lot of trust in Goldschmidt. She probably assumed that Goldschmidt would act in her best interests, look out for her, you know, like a good neighbor should. But that trust was totally betrayed by Goldschmidt's secret role as the agent for the buyers. So even though it wasn't a formal legal fiduciary relationship, like a lawyer-client relationship, the court said that the nature of their relationship created an expectation of good faith, an expectation that Goldschmidt would be honest and upfront with Russo. And that just didn't happen.
Right. So even without a fancy legal title, that neighborly connection carried a real weight of trust that was exploited. And of course, we can't forget about the elephant in the room, the ridiculously low price the property was sold for.
Absolutely. That ridiculously low sale price is a huge red flag, a major sign that something wasn't right. And when you combine that with the fact that Russo didn't have any independent advice, no lawyer, no real estate agent to tell us she was getting a raw deal, and the fact that the buyers, on the other hand, did have legal representation and were almost certainly aware of Russo's vulnerability, well, it paints a pretty clear picture of an unfair transaction.
It does seem like the court was looking at the whole situation, not just one thing in isolation.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. The court really emphasized the cumulative effect of all these different factors. So Russo's vulnerability on its own, or even the breach of trust by her neighbor on its own, those might not have been enough to prove undue influence. But when you put everything together, Russo's mental health challenges, the betrayal by her neighbor, the grossly inadequate price, and her lack of any independent advice, well, all of that combined created a really compelling case of undue influence.
So the trial court looked at all of this and said, nope, this sale can't stand. We're rescinding it. But the case didn't end there, right? It went up to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. Did they see things the same way? What was their reasoning?
They did. They totally agreed with the trial court. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court upheld the decision to rescind the sale, and they really honed in on a couple of key things. The buyer's awareness of Russo's vulnerability, that was a big one. The fact that they knew, or at least should have known through their agent, that they were essentially taking advantage of someone in a weakened state, well, the court was not okay with that. And they also put a lot of emphasis on Goldschmidt's dual role, that hidden agency. The court found that this created a huge conflict of interest and contributed to the overall unfairness of the situation.
It really highlights that idea of procedural unfairness, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It wasn't a level playing field. Russo was essentially alone, isolated, and potentially not thinking clearly while the buyers had all their ducks in a row. And when it came to the remedy, the Supreme Judicial Court stuck with the rescission. So the sale was reversed and both sides were put back as close as possible to the position they were in before the sale. Russo did have to return the money she received, which was around $12,000 after some adjustments.
So not just about punishing the buyers, but also about righting a wrong, trying to restore some fairness.
Exactly. At the end of the day, the big takeaway from Russo v. Miller is that contracts need to be based on genuine free will, a true meeting of the minds. When that free will is compromised, when someone is taken advantage of because of undue influence, the law steps in to provide a way out. And Russo really shows how courts look at these situations, how they scrutinize transactions where there's a significant power imbalance, especially when that imbalance involves a breach of trust or terms that are just blatantly unfair.
So for everyone listening, the key takeaway is that the courts take undue influence very seriously. They're not just looking at the black and white of the contract. They're looking at the entire context, the relationship between the parties, the circumstances surrounding the agreement. In this case, it's a powerful reminder that the law is there to protect vulnerable individuals, to make sure agreements are based on fairness and genuine consent.
And I think it goes beyond just knowing the legal rules. It's about awareness, being aware of these dynamics, these potential power imbalances in our own lives and our interactions with others. We all have a responsibility to make sure that the agreements we enter into, the relationships we're part of, are based on mutual respect and fairness.
Couldn't agree more. This case, it's not just a dusty old legal precedent. It's a reminder to think critically, to look out for ourselves and others, and to make sure that we're all playing on a level playing field.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for having me.